Welcome to The Fitpreneurs, the show that will help you flex your business muscles so you can make more money and live the life you really want. No more complaining, whining, or being a wimp. It's time to pump up your fitness business and push yourself beyond your comfort zone. So no girly men or lazy ladies allowed. It's time for me to do some push-ups and turn things over to your host, Simon Lovell.
Hey, this is Simon, and welcome to the latest episode of the Fitpreneurs. And I'm here in San Diego, just about to actually come into the weekend, actually having a cool meetup with some Fitpreneurs this weekend. If you're not actually using meetup.com as a strategy, then I would definitely check into Meetup to help you build communities. As always, guys, love getting your feedback. So head to iTunes to give a 5-star review, obviously. And also, if you haven't checked out yet, fitpreneurs.com, get a free copy of the new Encyclopedia of Modern Fitness Business Building. And as always, apply for your free call where we can look at where your business is right now and where you're trying to get to. Now, as always, I love interviews and co-hosting these episodes with awesome people. And my next guest definitely fits that bill. Alex Chango works with membership-based businesses and specializes with martial arts schools. So this is all going to be kick-ass marketing in this episode, guys. You know, he's worked and operated a karate school since he was 14 years old, and Alex owned and operated a flagship location and a chain of 6 karate schools in North Carolina for 10 years. I actually just bypassed that place once. I didn't actually stay there for long. And you know, while many karate school owners focus on more students and bigger studios, Alex works with the owner who is most concerned with the quality of their life. Incredibly important. And his clients, you know, on his mastermind called Revolution, run single locations with less than 250 students, a highly profitable, work only 4 or 5 days a week and earn 6-figure incomes doing what they love. And so I am super excited to bring on Mr. Alex Chango.
Hey, Simon, how are you?
I'm good, man. Why don't we tell the guys where we met and how we're kind of connected? Because we just recently just caught back up, and we've both been on our merry way doing lots of different things. But we have a lot in common, don't we?
We sure do. In fact, we met in Las Vegas just about 2 years ago, working with a really kick-ass guy named Kevin Nations. And actually, the funny thing is, I mean, I think we might have met in the gym, and actually we're training, and we're working out, and that's how we really connected. I think we might have seen each other at the meeting, but we really connected over doing what we do, which is working out and training.
Yeah. You know, in this episode, I want to talk about the karate stuff, obviously, which is your speciality, but also for the listeners, you know, take on board what Alex is going to share and teaching, because it's definitely applicable across the board in terms of strategy. So, you know, let's just wind back to when you first got into this, and what was the passion, what was the drive? Because, you mentioned something really important, which is about lifestyle. You know, why do people open karate schools in the first place? You know, does it typically stem from something? Or because I know in my experience with Fitpreneurs and linking that, what do you find some commonalities now working with so many karate school owners?
It's one thing, and I'll tell you exactly what it's not, which I imagine for a lot of fit pros is the same too. What it never starts off as is money, ever. You know, there's a lot easier ways to make money than running a karate studio. But it's because usually they do it because they love it. They love martial arts, and it might have transformed their life. Like for me, I started martial arts when I was 10 years old. My dad made me take the class. He made me because I was a shy, skinny 10-year-old kid with no friends. I didn't do activities. I didn't play sports. And he wanted me to be a more confident kid. And literally within weeks of taking karate, I was changing, and that was when I was like 10, 11 years old. By the time I made my black belt when I was 12, because I went every single day, and it really, Simon, changed my life. I became an instructor. I got to teach other kids, and I actually made the decision I was going to do this as a martial arts pro while I was in university. I was almost finished with the university, and I saw my instructor was making, I had no idea how much the guy was making, but he was making it. He was making a living, but he did something that he absolutely loved that I was good at, and I said to him, "Hey, I'd like to do this too. I'd like to open a school with you." And so we partnered together, and that's how I got into it. It was out of love. And the one key thing was there was this little girl. In fact, she might listen to this. Her name is Claire. And she was 5 years old at the time. And we were at this karate tournament, and I'd been teaching her over the summer. And I just remember her running up to me with this giant trophy. They give all the trophies. You know, every kid gets a trophy, but she got a giant one. And she ran over to me, and she said, they would call me Mr. Chang Ho. She said, "Mr. Chang Ho, it's because of you that I got this trophy." And she gave me a big hug, and I totally melted. And I made that decision. I was like, "I need to do this. I need to do this every single day." And
Yeah.
that's how I got started, man.
Nice. Actually, it reminds me because part of my journey when I was kind of bullied at school was I wanted to fight back to the bullies, and so well, actually the guy that took me into the gym and started to build my confidence, he then took me into a kung fu class, Peck Mai, and if that's how you pronounce it, and that started a journey for me too, which was into just really building confidence. So that's
Yes.
awesome. And actually, we'll talk about bullying a little bit later because I know you have some side projects going on, which are really awesome, which is
Absolutely.
in alignment with your mission. But before we go into that, let's talk about karate schools. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see karate school owners making? Quick changes, things that they can do that yield a really good return? Because, when you're in the business all the time, it's hard to see outright.
Absolutely. Well, I think this is probably not just with karate schools, but with your Fit Pros as well as any business, which is the whole idea of that one movie, Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. And also the focus on, hey, we're going to have the very best. If we just have the best trainers, if we just have the best karate classes, if we just have the best cheeseburger, whatever, then we're going to be successful. And the fact is, Simon, that's if you really want to be the best and be super successful, you have to have that. That's given. The other side of it is the communication of that. It's letting people know how whatever you got, how in my case, martial arts, is going to be relevant to their life. How it's going to build up their confidence, what's going on with them. And so it's a failure and maybe it's a failure to recognize the importance of the communication of their service and only focusing on great service. Great service is required. It's given. It's just like you have to have a bathroom in your place, man. You've got to have great service, because if you don't, you could have all, in fact, you can have all the marketing, you can have all the tools, you can have all the cool whiz bang websites, and you'll still suffer, or it'll be a lot harder because you're losing people because your service sucks.
Well, what do you think many karate owner gym owners, karate school owners think that they're selling versus what they need to sell in terms of the positioning of that?
They think they're selling martial arts. They think they're selling classes and really awesome stuff, and they are. Like, they'll teach you, they'll tell you all day how if you can do this program, hey, you should do this program. It's only a little bit more money, but you get to do nunchucks, and you get to learn how to use a sword, and you can come every day. Where that may not be valuable to the busy parent who's already stressing to get there 2 times a week. Who might be afraid that her kid, why should she be swinging around a nunchuck? Until they can again make it relevant to them. So it's focusing on the features of their program. Hey, you can do this, you can do that, you get to buy this thing, you get to wear a red uniform instead of a white one. And really focusing on what is it that your client and your parents are looking for, and how can you make their life better?
Yeah, awesome. So, what are some of the most effective ways for a karate school to market?
Well, I'll tell you, nowadays, one of the biggest things is, and I think you teach this to your guys too, your guys and gals, which is online marketing, which is, there's Facebook, there's so many inexpensive ways to do that. But that also leaves a huge opportunity for anyone who wants to do offline marketing. As a lot of trends are going towards websites, Google, social media, there still is that one thing that until they ban it or make it illegal, that you can always do, which is get in front of people. You
So
know,
many, so many
just
fears around generally doing that, which is crazy for a lot of people who have confidence in training people, but actually getting in front and talking to people is another matter, right?
you're
What to
absolutely
say,
right.
fear of judgment, what if this, what if that, and
It's huge.
probably just need to go and I don't know, power move.
It's huge, and you can do that, or at the same time, it's just a matter of strategy. Like for karate school owners, what they typically do best is teach. They're awesome teachers, so it's key when you market to make it like that because they have this confidence in this one context. Like you can get people in the ring and they can fight, and they'll go in. You know, these MMA guys are really, you know, badasses, man. But you put him in front of a mommy who's got a 5-year-old kid, and he has to ask him for, you know, a couple $1,000 or $150 a month. He gets nervous. So it's a matter of how can we make that marketing in the same way. So one of the things that I love to do, and I share with my clients and heck, the whole industry, is make your marketing teaching. You get in front of a booth and you teach kids how to break boards. Or you teach them how to do some self-defense moves or something like that to give them a sample of what you do and just give them a really easy way to invite them in and come to your class and spend some money with you and make their life better.
Was it you that I had this strategy which I thought was genius around the bouncy castles to attract kids? Was that by you
I
or?
tell you what, I don't know if I told you that, but that's a fabulous way to do that, which is on a weekend. I used to run a school that was right next to a pretty major grocery store. And on the weekends, if it's nice out, like the springtime, we'd just get out in the parking lot, we'd blow this thing up, you know, they cost $1,500, $1,800, and we just invite kids to come over. And every kid wants to jump. Hell, Simon, every adult wants to jump in these things somewhere down inside of them, right? So you set it up and you invite them in. And it attracts them, and you just talk to their parents about, hey, have you ever thought about having your kid try a martial arts class? Would your kid like to break a board?
And actually part of the strategy I had was a free loan to every child on their birthday, so that then they get the bouncy castle, all of the kids come, and then you kind of do the karate lessons while they're getting off waiting for their turn.
That's huge. Another great way to do that is when you look at local elementary schools. You know, to rent one of those things costs a couple $100. And elementary schools are strapped for cash. I mean, they're excited to get $50 donation. And if you just call up your local elementary school and you say, hey, I notice you've got a spring carnival coming up, and I know you guys are going to rent one of these things. We have one. Would you like us to bring it over? And of course they're going to say yes. And then you just say, hey, and we got this other thing we can do. We can teach kids how to break a board, or we can teach kids how to punch a target. Would you like us to do that too? And they usually say yes. And the funny thing is, Simon, when you give to your community like that, suddenly you don't have to chase people anymore. I have one school that I think they finally stopped this past year. I sold my school 3 years ago, but they continued to contact me over the years, every springtime. Hey, Alex, we've got our spring carnival coming up. Would you guys like to come out and bring your board breaking table? By the way, could you bring your house with you? You know, they're looking for that because we know if you can serve your community in the groups, whatever target market it is, that what they need, they will love you forever.
How important is it to position kind of the bullying, that type of angle when you're going to like the schools and stuff like that versus other strategies you may have used? Because I would imagine it would be a good one, right?
I will tell you what, the whole genesis of the whole bullying idea, and I know we'll probably talk about that a little bit more, came from one simple thing. Going into a lot of schools, and here in North Carolina where I live, what happened was we were no longer allowed to go into schools because of the whole idea of fighting. And it was actually, our businesses took a hit because that was a major source of new students for us. And so over the years, I was just thinking, how can we get in to help the community, to help the schools without actually teaching punching and kicking? And so I took the bullying angle. And eventually that morphed into having a bullying presentation where we can invite kids to have pizza at our karate school and learn how to be safe from bullies. And that eventually morphed into having book publications and things like that as well to further help the school, the parents, all of that. But bullying is just a huge, huge topic right now. I mean, Simon, you've probably seen that there are celebrities getting on board with this. You know, there's that one girl on YouTube who was with cyberbullying, noted as the ugliest girl on earth, and her face and her video was going all across the world, and how terrible that this girl must have felt. People are killing themselves, literally committing suicide because of bullying. And it's just something that one can be addressed by having teaching people to be more tolerant, but two, also to have even more confidence in themselves.
Nice. You know, what are some of the keys to running a profitable karate school, in your opinion? Because and profit is a very important word, you know. We talk about revenue versus profit, but profitable.
Profitable is key. You know, I've got they're not a client. I don't have permission to share their numbers, but I know of a school that does very well. They probably do 50K a month, and they're great at sales, and they're great at marketing, and they have a lot of people, and they net 10,000. Which is good money, but at the same time, there's also places that do less than half of that gross. They might do 20K a month, and they net 10. So the key is really knowing what it is that you want. If they're happy making $50,000 and profiting 10, I think that's great. The question is, are they getting what they want? Do people want to have a big school and have a lot of students? Or do they want to have a smaller school and know their students well? And then another key is watch the expenses. Sometimes people get ego. They say, I need a bigger place. I have, you know, I need 3,000 square feet for my studio, and they only have 20 students. Well, I need more space. If I have more space, I can have more students, which definitely isn't true. Nowadays, with marketing and social media and I mean, all different marketing ways, you don't need a location that's in a top grade shopping center where that would attract a lot of walk-by traffic. But if you're good on social media and you're good with boots and you're good with your community, you can attract them to you. So you can save thousands of dollars every single month by having a B-grade location and just upping your relationships in your community.
Yeah.
Another thing is staff. A lot of people will hire staff before they're ready for it. And there's nothing wrong with having staff, Simon, but paying instructors just to teach that aren't contributing to the bottom line because you feel like you need three or four instructors on the floor may be inappropriate. What people may need to be are better teachers and more efficient with their training floor. Because I know people, again, who make good gross, but they spend so much of it in payroll, and it's not helping anybody.
You know, for me, if a fitness professional, wannabe fitpreneur, comes to me and, you know, they're selling, you know, one-to-one sessions, they're doing blocks, they're typically doing, you know, a non-semi-private model, which is not leveraged, they're not making money online. I know I can go in and bring a massive return fast, you know, rapid growth. So for you, what are some existing business models that typically maybe are being taught that really aren't supporting, you know, a six-figure plus business?
I think one that may not serve people necessarily is this focus, again, like I mentioned, on having a lot of staff in the beginning. I'm not afraid of hard work, and I do believe that, you know, I'm all about quality of life and lifestyle, but I also believe in hustling. I just believe in hustling smart. And so sometimes you just got to grind it first for yourself for a little while and then just learn the hustle that's not going to be as time intensive. It's going to be more leveraged. And I see folks really encouraging martial arts pros to hire more staff when they really don't need to do it. They're encouraging them, hey, you need to make sure that you're working on your business, not in your business, when the fact is, you know, sometimes your ass needs to be working in your business. In fact, if you don't know your business inside and out and you hire a staff member on and they're doing it, and you don't know how it goes. And then because they're not invested, they quit, or they move on, or they do the next thing, or they get married, or they get divorced, and you're stuck holding the bag. You need to know how to run your business. So run your business probably yourself first, and then start to leverage out. And I think that on its own, if people will just become better and invest in themselves and stop looking at trying to hire so many people at first and just doing it at the appropriate time, will save them a bunch of money in the beginning, make them better trainers, make them better leaders, and then when they've got the money, hey, let me bring you on.
Mm-hmm.
Effectiveness. Let me speak English here. Effectiveness first in yourself, and then work on efficiency, and leverage out.
What are some other disciplines that you see as commonalities of some of your top performing clients?
I will say this: they invest in themselves. Number one, whether it's coaching, whether it's fitness, whether it's eating well. And another thing is that whatever is important to them, they make time for it even in the beginning. If your family, if you're married and you've got kids, they make time with their kids early on. That doesn't mean that they don't hustle. That means that, okay, well, for example, I've got a client who is working 7 days a week. He's got several kids, he's married, and it just wasn't working. So one of the things he committed to doing was he's moving from 7 days, now he only works six. Awesome. 100% of Sundays is with his families. 100% is with his kids. And he focuses on that, and he still gets the same amount of stuff done in 6 days. And, by the way, he actually makes more money because he's getting the things that are most important to him met. Those, as we both know, having done work with Tony Robbins, those needs are being met. The needs of family, the needs of connection and love, and making sure those are taken care of, which actually help his business.
Mm. Nice. You know, some people think that having a profitable karate school means that you have to sacrifice in quality. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely not. In fact, I believe the opposite. And I can say this with 100% integrity, Simon, because I was one of those guys that sacrificed quality. I frankly stopped caring about how good the kids looked. I didn't care about, physical quality. I tricked myself into saying, hey, it's just about, making them feel more confident. But in the physical discipline of doing martial arts, which I'm sure is the same in training and the same in any kind of dance, yoga, whatnot, part of the development is actually in the physical discipline of doing it and doing it well. And, parents aren't dumb. If you go out there and we try to tell them, it's like this whole giving all the trophies to everyone kind of thing. If you tell them they're doing, oh, your kid's doing a great job, they can tell if their kid isn't doing a great job or not. And the kid, the way they feel is important too. If the kid doesn't feel like they're doing a good job, that's the worst. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we do have some standard of quality that is reasonable for their level. For a beginner, we call them a white belt. For a beginner, there needs to be some reasonable quality that they're going to be at that's achievable for them in a certain amount of time. And then we just up-level it from there. There's some styles now that are perhaps a little excessive in their standard, which they're welcome to do. They might not even let someone, move up from the first level to the second level until, a year. And I think having a step of progress is important. But definitely having quality is going to make people's businesses that much better in terms of the ongoing training, the retention, and just keeping clients.
It's so easy, isn't it? It's so easy to follow a formula and just, go based on, what everyone else is doing. Where for me and my clients, I'm always asking that question, how can I improve better? How can I get better results? How can I improve the systems? How can I wow clients even more? And I think that if you're constantly asking that question, you're always going to be ahead of the game.
Absolutely, man. And that's something I really respect in you in our relationship, and you're always wondering how can I get the best results and also, get results more quickly for my clients without sacrificing quality. And by always looking to, and again, not just system-wide, but your particular clients and helping them, it's so much easier to keep a client than it is to enroll a bunch more.
Just out of interest, what's the average kind of life cycle of of someone who comes into a school?
It depends on, interestingly enough, it depends on the format. For a single member, typically, and this is some data that might be a little old, but I think it still is applicable now. A single kid or adult who trains typically about 9 months. If they're involved with their family, it's typically 11 months. So you're getting 2 more months out of someone that's involved with their family or brothers or sisters or parents in there. Other markets, like a lot of people do after school, it's a good bit longer. But this is a mix between longer-term clients as well as front-end clients that might stick around for 6 months.
Let's talk about referrals actually a bit. I guess this is a fantastic business model to implement some powerful referral systems, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of different things with referrals, a lot of different ways that people have done. I was just listening to someone tell me that one of the easiest ways they would do is they just go to the store and buy a bunch of toys and say, if you bring a friend to class, you'll get this toy. And that kind of stuff works. But really what it comes down to is results. We can go to the parents and ask the parents, hey, do you know anyone else? Your kid's transformed his confidence, massively in the past 3 months. Do you have any girlfriends or do you have any other families that have kids that may not be as confident who could use some confidence as well, just like your kid has done? And rather than giving them a bribe to refer, they actually start by giving a gift. They're giving contribution. They're helping out someone else to bring in their friend, because the whole idea of paying your if you I would say this, if you focus on just paying your clients to bring in friends, it changes the dynamic a bit. But and there's nothing wrong with referral fees, don't get me wrong. But if that becomes a secondary consideration to, hey, I've got a friend, I know that they could benefit from this program too, and we keep them thinking about that. And it's totally appropriate to have membership drives. Like, I remember when the Xbox 360 came out years ago and it was the hottest thing and no one can get it, we had six of them. And we did a referral drive and people were inviting their friends in, and that was good and we got students off of that. But even though there was sheer volume of referrals in terms of enrollments, they were almost just the same as when we just went out and asked people, hey, do you know anyone else who could use the same benefits and the same transformation like you're getting from your kids?
I want to talk a bit about legalities, because something came up to me then about social media, and the my brain's popping off like popcorn with ideas as normal. But with as people achieve a different belt, celebrating on social media, what's the kind of the issues raised around kind of stuff with pictures with views, that type of thing, just the marketing? You have to have any special disclaimers or do anything differently than if you're running a different type of business?
Because we're dealing with kids, it does get a little bit tricky. I always say this, if you have rapport with your students and your clients, and you just let them know what you're gonna do, then they'll most of the time say yes, and occasionally they'll say no. And if they say no, don't post social media. I often I would never recommend that clients would put the first name and last name of a child. Sometimes you may not even need to put the name of the child on there, just because of safety reasons. I mean, I've taught kid safety seminars. Well, they'll even say, don't put your kid's name on their backpack. Things like that, just because social media is so big and so widespread. That being said, if parents are okay with it, oftentimes they'll post it themselves. and you can ask them, hey, you know, I've got this picture of your family. Would you like to post it and tag us in that? And that's absolutely appropriate. And oftentimes they'll just be so happy to do that. I know a lot of my clients and even just my friends in the industry, their kid will get a little, and I'm going to mention this guy's name just because I think he's a badass. His name is Josh Hayhurst. He's out in Maryland, and he sends out little good job cards to his kids, and they are so proud when they get those. They'll post them on social media, and they'll put their kid in their karate uniform holding this card that says, "You're awesome," and just, you know, say the world about their instructor, Josh.
I would presume
So,
that Snapchat is a perfect platform for snapping stuff like this and
With geo filters now, and in fact, Simon, not too many people in the martial arts industry are currently using Snapchat, but I sent something out a while back about the geo filters when they have a special event. Oh my goodness. I mean, you can spend $5, $10 on an event, and you can have people snap in with your logo on it and all kinds of stuff. And people, I mean, Snapchat is huge now. Huge opportunity to just get it out in terms of exposure.
What about other offerings like, you know, after school, you know, Zumba classes, stuff like that, additional revenue streams, what are some things that you see a lot of karate schools not doing that they should be definitely doing?
They, you know what? A lot of places are doing these things, and for the most part, interestingly enough, I would say that they shouldn't be doing them. But it all depends on appropriateness. For example, if someone is kicking ass in their core program, let's say they're doing Taekwondo, which is a style of martial arts, and if they are just getting it and they're getting all their goals met with that, if they want to add on another program, it's absolutely appropriate. Because there are time spots that are open and it works out well. When someone looks to add on another program because one of their other programs is not meeting their needs or meeting their financial needs, that's where it gets a little sticky because what's happening is they're trying to focus on two different programs that, and neither one of them are doing well. So they're trying to make a little bit of money from Taekwondo and a little bit of money from Zumba and a little bit of money from after school, and none of them are doing really well. What would be best is to focus on one. A couple of my friends run a terrific after school coaching program that teaches people to focus on your after school, and that's absolutely appropriate. Or teaches people to focus just on kickboxing, that's absolutely appropriate. But the key would be make your core business work first. If you need help with that, hire someone, go to a mastermind, read a book, whatever it is, make that work. And once you've maximized that, then you can start looking at the other time spots and say, you know what, my night program's kicking ass. Let's see if I can add a day program. And it's almost like having another karate school within yours. If you're making 40,000 a month at night and you add another 20,000 a month in the morning, awesome.
I always love talking about results. You know, we can talk strategy a lot, and it's awesome, and people can implement that. Let's talk about, maybe one of the biggest shifts that you've had with a client who's gone from X to Z, or A to B, either, or from, I don't know, white to black, or whatever you want to use. But I don't know, a big result. Let's talk about big results so that people can actually understand really what's possible when you implement this stuff.
Absolutely. You know, I'll start on the lower end just because I had a couple ladies out actually in the UK that were awesome. They're fantastic. And they came to me. They'd actually had a couple things happen in their school due to some external circumstances. And they had lost all of their students except for five. And I'd been in contact with them for a while and just listened to some of the things that they were looking for. And by actually getting out and getting known in their community and engaging where no one else was willing to do that, they actually grew their school from five students to, I believe it's 97 is the number between March and December of last year. And so that was a huge number. They started at, and again, you'll know these numbers much better than I do, Simon. They started at about £25 per month, and they had up-leveled that to at least 50 for their higher-end program by the end of the year. And people were still paying it. They were still doing it. And so by these two ladies going out and just meeting people and getting out in their community and getting known, that was a huge result for them. Sustainable results, billing income, ongoing revenue, and they were just keeping their students. So that's something that, again, they weren't necessarily enrolling. They didn't have all 97, or in that case, 92 show up at once, but they had a few come in every month, 10 people a month that they could handle. The key was the number of people they could handle and keep every single month. Their number was about 10 or 12, and they just had that going on a little bit, and they built up. So that was a huge success story from a growth perspective. Another guy I have is actually in the middle of Kansas, and he's in a military town, and he was already kind of successful when working together. When we started working together, I should say, we've been working together about 2 years, and what he's done is actually really, really leveraged, and he's kept his lifestyle. So he went from teaching multiple days per week. He now only teaches 4 days a week. He spends every weekend with his children and his wife, unless, you know, if he chooses to work on the weekends, it's his choice, but most times he doesn't. And he's sustainably grown his billing check from $15,000 per month to 23.5. So $23,500 per month, one location, working 4 days a week. He's actually a part-time art teacher. I remember when I first started with him, I asked him, hey, do you want to go full-time and not have to do art? And he said, actually, I kind of like it. So the man just loves it, and he loves his life. He's a great martial artist. He focuses on quality. And another thing is he's particular about who he takes on. He doesn't just take anyone on as a student. Because as one of the things we've learned is if you get one person in your group who's a bit difficult, it can ruin the experience for everybody. Mm. So he's very selective about his clients, and he doesn't invite everyone to enroll. Mm. And that's really freeing for him because he gets to choose who he works with and who he trains to become black belts.
Nice. Yep. You don't want to be, in my opinion, putting prices on websites and letting everyone buy, because it just tells everyone that everyone is acceptable and not everyone is the perfect fit. What are some industry trends that you see a lot of people offering that really just don't work?
I think you just mentioned one of them, Simon. Allowing people to register online and pay. In fact, that's the key. It's the paying. You know, it's just my belief and my experience that if someone pays you money, they're going to expect some sort of value. And when we're talking about like things like a product, like a book or, you know, a chair, a piece of furniture, or even an information product where there's not a whole lot of interaction, I think that's totally appropriate. But when we're talking about when we actually have to work with them and deal with them, it can be quite taxing. Like if you sell something online to somebody that's a six-week membership, number one, when they pay you, they've essentially signed a contract with you, which means they're going to pay you. And guess what? They already paid you. That's also a contract on your end, which is you're going to service them for whatever term that you agreed to.
Mm.
And depending on what the offer is, it may not be a great fit. And, of course, you can refund them, but there's always some really interesting, energetic dynamic there, starting refunding people. And they might even say on social media, hey, they didn't take me. They wouldn't accept me. Whereas if you offer to meet them first and give them a free lesson and, you know, take them on a tour and meet them, and you can tell them to their face, I don't think it's a good fit. And they may respect that because you haven't taken their money yet.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's making sure it's the right fit. Another thing is just simply highly discounted offers, which along with that, again, I don't think there's anything wrong with a discount. It's more of highly discounted offer will attract less committed clients. And if you've collected online, then you have no idea what you're getting. And if you sign someone up for $1 for 6 weeks, you must service them for 6 weeks.
Mm.
And that might be very painful.
Mm. Absolutely. Things like Groupon.
That's right.
I always like to ask this question. Where do you think the industry is going? You know, it's like a few years, 5 years, 10, 15, 20 years down the line. Like, what do you, because I mean, I see you know, with where I'm taking the Fitpreneurs and what I wanted to do. And, you know, I have this big vision. What do you see karate schools going? What do you see like the evolution of this moving forward? And another question, what you feel absolutely needs to happen?
You know, I think the industry is actually moving in a good direction, and it's splitting a little bit, and that's okay. It's maturing, and it's realizing that there isn't one system, one fit for everyone. Some people are going to want to have smaller schools. Some people are going to want to have bigger schools. Some people are going to want to do one-on-one private lessons. Some people are going to do all groups. And as people become educated and realize that one system doesn't fit for everyone, they can find what works for them. Just like there's different martial arts or even different fitness programs, there's something that they can do and make it work. But the key is going to be for them to know themselves enough and what they want. And what's going to be vital for school owners and this entire industry is for people to become more educated about who they are and what's out there to find the fit. That there are different options, they need to know themselves. Because if you've got someone who hates managing people and they believe that the only way to have success is to run multi-locations and have 20 staff members, that person will go insane trying to do that.
Yeah, and also
versus running one school with a part-time employee that they do themselves and make six figures.
There's so many people who I see that want to replicate their existing business. It's not optimized, you know, and it's like they want to create more locations, but what they have isn't working. And so it's crazy even think about doing that. You've got to really fully optimize what you already have and then replicate a model that works, not that's broke.
Well, you know, Michael Gerber, and I absolutely respect him for the E-Myth, because there's the whole idea of the entrepreneurial seizure, where people feel like they should be an entrepreneur and they shouldn't be. Well, at the same time, I think a lot of people are perhaps haven't done the proper training to realize, you know what, that really isn't who they are. And they do fall in love with the idea of, hey, I'm going to work on my business, not in my business. And, okay, well, here I am. I've been doing this for 2 years. Let me replicate my business. Let me get some employees. And their business isn't ready. So it's almost like an improper usage of the concept of E-Myth.
If there was one thing that you could tell a karate school owner who wanted to grow their business, what would that be? If it was like one ninja trick, oh, I know what I did there. It wasn't even on purpose.
I'd say this: create relationships and maintain them right there in your community. You know, right now Facebook's hot, and it might not be in a couple of years, or it might be. And Snapchat's coming up, and it's becoming hot, and it might be or it might not be. And in the past, you know, phone book ads were hot, but there's something that is never going to go away as long as culture exists, which is communities and people knowing one another. People are still going out to these local fairs. People are still going to school. So, and people are still going to work. They're still going to shop at the supermarket until Amazon Instant takes over all of that. But
so drones have taken over and people are
drones like have taken over. But even with that, man, people still want to go and check out the fruits at the farmer's market. So get out of your studio and create relationships with other people, because people are going to, and this was actually this is what our mentor Kevin Nations taught us. Hey, people are going to sign up for you for what you can teach them, but they're going to stay with you for who you are. And as more people get to know who you are and what you do, and you just go out and serve your look. If you're running a karate school that serves a 5-mile radius, you serve the hell of that 5-mile radius in every school, every business, every fire department, every police department, and they know you as the karate guy. You won't need to market as hard.
A lot of people struggle, and I talk about this on my coaching calls, which is like someone says to me, you know, I'm in a low-income area, I haven't got many people around me, and I'm like, how many people in your city? And I'll say like 5,000-10,000. I'm like, seriously, if I put a gun to your head and there was 100 people in your area, like how many could you get to sign up? It's not about, it's all about the psychology. It's all about
That's
being
right.
willing to do what other people aren't willing to do. And when you overcome your fear and you have a good strategy, what happens is that you start to do these things and you actually start to feel really good. You actually start to feel like, oh my God, I'm really loving like being in front of people. I'm really loving the connection I'm making. And as you know, and this will resonate with you, Alex, which is how you feel and how you make other people feel. And if you just focus on that instead of all the fears and the things that are coming up for you, then you will have a powerful outcome that will be serving a community beyond what you ever expected. I want to bring something up, and you might challenge me on this just in terms of strategy, because I'm throwing around some ideas. You know, things are moving forward, and we talk about video marketing, very important. We talk about the privacy and protection of the kids, which I want to bring up again. But I want to talk about Facebook Live. What's your viewpoint on using that in marketing? Because, for example, gym owners, you know, they can use Facebook Live, have workouts that are going, you know, continuously, like a kind of gym cam type thing. How could that show up? And this is, you may have explored this, or it may be a big no-no. Or maybe there may be an alternative. How do you see live video being used with karate schools?
I think ultimately, and again, this is I'm not a law professional or anything like that, but I think ultimately it's a good idea to have that kind of introduction into your world. And at the same time, you just need to let everyone know about it. And because we are moving into an era where this whole idea of privacy. Hell, Facebook knows everything that you do. I was having a conversation with my father and my brother-in-law the other day. They said, we don't want anyone to know anything about us. We don't put anything on Facebook. I said, that's great, but in a world where we're becoming increasingly connected, people are going to know, and at the same time, we do need to protect ourselves through education and making sure our kids are going to be safe. So with Facebook Live, I've known a number of owners who will stream their self-defense class or their kids' bully prevention workshop or something like that. We just need to do our due diligence, let our the people who we serve, our clients, know, hey, we're going to do this, and honor their requests. And overall, you know, is there and maybe someone's going to disagree with me. Is there going to be some danger? I think there's danger in going to karate class. I think there's danger in walking across the street. I think there's danger in going to the mall. But, you know, especially filming the instructor and what's going on in the class, I think that's totally appropriate. We just need to be smart about it, and we do need to take care of kids.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Alex. I always ask my guests a book you recommend, maybe a quote that you love, or maybe it's going to be a Bruce Lee one, or maybe that's wrong with me to even think about that. A book that you think is an essential read, just out of your own personal maybe collection, and also maybe a quote.
I'll start with a book which I don't agree with everything this guy says. But in terms of
I already want to read it now.
you probably already have, Simon. It's Gary Vaynerchuk's new book, which is Ask Gary V. And it's just for something really simple. It's making sure that you are marketing in the year that you're operating your business. Let me not even say who they are, the relationship I have with them. I was watching a martial arts school, and I see their Facebook marketing, and it breaks my heart because these people are near and dear to me, and their Facebook marketing is pathetic, and they're using strategies that might have worked, I don't know, 3 or 5 years ago. But even strategies that worked 18 months ago may not necessarily work today. Hmm. But they're not keeping up with trends and what's going on. So it's important that people keep up with what is happening, especially with marketing and what is working and what may not be working. So Gary Vaynerchuk's new book, most recent book, Ask Gary V, is going to be great in terms of marketing. And then, of course, anything, anyone who wants a great start in personal development, someone that we both really have our lives changed by is Tony Robbins, and a great starter is Notes from a Friend. You could probably read that in a sitting. It's about 70 pages. I think the type's 14 points, so it's really big. But that'll really change the way that you think about yourself and other people.
Good stuff. Now, if you want to find out more about Alex, you can head to his website at www.alexchango.com. Alex, any final words of wisdom, thoughts, or chitter chat that you are thinking of?
Yeah, man. I know a lot of you listening today are fit pros. A lot of you guys are going to be martial artists. A lot of you guys are entrepreneurs that just want to do something. And this is, we're in one of those industries, whether it's fitness or martial arts, that we're doing something that we love. And absolutely, there's a way to make it work. And I honor everyone that goes into an industry like this, because it's not just about making a living, but it's about changing and transforming people's lives. And I absolutely honor you with that. And so I urge you, move forward with it. If you need some help, you know, there's a lot of resources out there. Simon, your book is fantastic. Your blog is fantastic. You know, I've got stuff going on. There's a lot of people out there. Go for it. Find some help if you need it. And just live that passion and help people out.
Thank you, Alex. And always, guys, if you've enjoyed this episode, do please share it. Also, head to iTunes and give a review. Plus, also, if you read the book, do head on to Amazon and give a review there also. Thank you, Alex. And I will see you in the next episode of The Fitpreneurs.
Guys, thanks for the killer episode. Listen, if you want to take your fitness business to the next level, terminate your competition, create ultimate freedom, buy new houses, cars, which could blow up, travel the world, or open your own gym where you can lift really heavy weights, then head to www.thefitpreneurs.com/free call for details on how to apply for your free accelerator call. Until the next episode, hasta la vista, Fit Pros.